On this week's show, can AI be trained to answer constructability questions with Marcus Kirkwood from Builder Answers? In this week's news, is this the end of the non-compete? And more.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the ConTech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time.
All right, I got my boy Nathan. He's back down in the office, so it seems like everything's up to date, ready to go.
No noise. No noise from myself making saws, but the last part of the fence is built. We are done. Well, okay, landscaping, but done.
Done. Yeah, just a punch list, you know. But this is a special episode. We got another person, and this is the ConTech Crew brought to you by Colorado. Marcus, how you doing, man?
Doing awesome. Couldn't be better, man. Spring in Colorado.
My favorite time. You never know what the weather's going to be. I was driving in snow last week and I'm looking outside going, I got to get the bike out in a couple hours. Well, let's jump straight in. We're going to waste no time because I think everybody's going to dig what we have to talk about. So Marcus, you have kind of an interesting background as how you got here. So let everybody know a little bit about yourself, kind of your path to get here today. To what I think something, one of the first things I've passed through people in the AI spectrum that's really got my eyes, you know, got my eyes opened a little bit.
I started out in the industry straight out of school. I graduated from University of Colorado up in Boulder, and, you know, like everybody else, I thought, why not get into construction? It's the sexiest, most popular industry out there. I had some doors open. I felt like there were a couple of things that we could help improve, I guess, is really the simple answer. That's how all great businesses are started, right? Making progress. There were some industry norms that didn't seem normal to me in every other industry. And I thought we could level that up on the supply side of the industry. So I started out post-construction supply straight out of school. That was 13 years ago. That company is growing and will continue to grow. That's how I fell in love with this industry, more because of the people in it than anything else. I love the blue collar aspect of things. I love that we're trying to figure things out. But, you know, at the end of the day, a 2x4 and a nail are so similar to what they were 120 years ago. We just haven't seen that progress in the space. That's become more and more prevalent the last 5 to 10 years. And that itch hasn't really gone away for me. Dabbled a little bit in the project management space on the software side of things. Learned a ton through that process. And I think ultimately what I found is that there's a space in this industry for progress to be made, but it's not going to come just from these giant, robust tools that only project managers and folks in the office or occasionally superintendents who are officing on a job site are using. And I wanted to help try to solve that problem so that, you know, essentially what we're asking kids to do who are graduated from college or high school is to put down what they've been using for 10 to 15 years in their growth and education and pick up a hammer. Meanwhile, tell them they're not digressing in their growth as a human being or in their career. And no one's getting tricked by that. So we've got to figure out how to implement technology, which is way too vague of a word, but we've got to figure out how to implement what I would call a normal day-to-day life for a human being graduating high school or college into our job site. And until we have 1,000 of those different tools in that tech tool belt, so to speak, we're never going to get where we need to get to actually move this industry forward. So that was essentially the genesis of Builder Answers. Builder Answers, you guys obviously know a little bit about it, but I want that to be one of those tools in the tool belt.
It's really pretty awesome way to break it down, because I kind of think about, you know, just the difference in what, you know, maybe if you look back at, I'll use myself here. If you look back at me when I graduated from from high school, there was none of that technology, right? There was none of those tools. And now if I look at my 16-year-old son who graduated in a couple of years, I don't really quantify it as 1,000 tools, Marcus, until you really start talking about it. And then I think about his laptop, the different platforms that he's using on his laptop, his PlayStation, his, you know, the Oculus, the phone itself that's got, you know, Discord and the other things that they communicate with one another and Snapchat. And I start to realize, oh, wait, yeah, 1,000 seems like a lot, but it is kind of what that high school student looks like today.
And how many, you know, you call one of those things a tool, but how many aspects are there to each of those tools? It's really a tool in and of itself. I mean, you know, a podcast is a tool for education and there's an app on your phone for it, and email is a tool, and using whatever web browser you use is a tool, and every other app. So you got to learn all those different aspects of things. So 1,000, 100, 10, everybody's makeup's a little bit different for what they can handle, whether it's actual physical hardware like a hammer or being able to use their phone or a computer on a job site to make themselves more productive. We're being naive if we think that they're just going to set all the stuff down that they're comfortable with and do things the way they were done 120 years ago. It's just not plausible anymore.
So I want to go back a little bit because I liked your description of the kind of the stigma that certainly we've all experienced with construction. And as someone, you know, who went to business school and university and has come into the trades, like what drives kind of your passion for attacking that stigma? Because I found that in traveling around the world and talking to folks in other parts of Europe, that stigma doesn't exist in other cultures. Like, it is very much a North American, American culture, and even a generational thing that is kind of specifically within a certain generation. But I guess, yeah, like what kind of drives that passion for you to want to attack that? Is there any backstory what led to that?
Yeah, I think part of it is just hardwired. I'm competitive. And because this is the industry that I work in, I want the industry to be successful. I think, you know, there were a couple of questions lying in there, Nathan. You had Jim Jones on, who's working on getting shop classes back in school. I performed an interview with somebody a week or so ago who was talking about the impact that those programs coming into their school, they just graduated from high school, have had on them. And we don't even have the exposure to that anymore. So my answer to your question, why is it different here in the States than it is in the rest of the world, is twofold. One, we don't provide any exposure anymore. The places where we do provide exposure, in my opinion, shop classes, something that I wish that I had, that was non-existent for my generation. I didn't get any of that exposure. If I had, you don't see that as something that you look down upon. So that, coupled with the fact that we're so driven, preoccupied by whatever other words you want to use, by social media, you don't see a guy on a construction site talking about things that you aspire to become. You see a guy sitting behind a computer, sitting behind a microphone, talking about software, talking about finance, et cetera, et cetera. So those things that motivate people, we're not exposed to construction as a motivating career. We don't get to see the positives of working with your hands in a shop class. And we also don't see the positives of the experience presented on social media platforms or whatever other areas that you see that drive your decisions. Those normally come from parents, right? My dad was a carpenter, so I became a carpenter. Well, that just doesn't cut it anymore. We got to have more exposure than that because there's more opportunity than there used to be. So social media shoving things down our throats and not getting exposed to things. I mean, we've created this beast that we've got with the labor gap in the trades. We got to figure out a way to fix it. So long-winded answer, Nathan, but I'm competitive. I see all these things that don't seem to align with a successful future, and I want to help create a successful future.
Well said. I need to introduce you to my cousin. He lives in Longmont, and he's a former, still is a brilliant mechanical engineer, 3D printing entrepreneur. He started a business, but it just didn't quite make it as a lot of startups do. And teaching shop, but he's a shop teacher. And he would say the exact same things, and just the value that he gets from the interaction with the students and kind of getting back to the value of that. I think there's so much to that. So kudos to you for sharing that passion. That's awesome.
Yeah, I want to dig into just while you're talking about it, because it's great to hear, because we're all Colorado. Jim Jones is doing that in Colorado. But we have some others who are attacking that social media, that issue. Like, you know, you got Tyler Campbell from Construction Brothers, who's out there. And it's funny because he's out there, and I see sort of some of the reaction to what he's trying to get people to do, to put things on social media platforms that show us in a different light. Because honestly, if you go look right now, and we used to do this on the crew, and you notice that we don't as much anymore, is show all the construction fails, you know, the two dozers fighting with one another, backhoes fighting with one another, whatever. And it was like, oh, we're kind of perpetuating a stereotype. Yeah.
I would visually eye roll if I was ever hosting on any of those when those would come up.
Yes. And they are gone. You won't see those. I mean, we will show certain things these days, cause you know, unfortunately we still have some of it, but not so much that, but you know, portraying us in a different light. And you have like Aaron Witt, from Bill Witt, that's doing, you know, this incredible high powered photography, and it's got a learning management system, but he's also, you know, done a lot around the media side. So we need that. What else do we need in the industry, you know, to sort of, cause it's there's no one silver bullet. What else do you think we need in the industry? You got shop classes. We've got some better look on social media. What else?
I don't even know so much that the creation of something on social media matters as much as what the actual output is, right? When you drive down the street and you work in the trades and you see a building that you helped create, or you helped build a bridge and your family's driving over it in their vehicle, that's something that you feel a sense of pride about, right? And getting to talk about those things and sharing those things, whether it's on social media or otherwise, I think is what helps move the industry forward. And the stigmas about it being a bottom of the barrel industry, we've got to help get those to go away. And that's by hiring really good people who do really good work instead of scratching things together. Now, you know, I don't want to go too deep here. Maybe you want to guide us in a different direction, but with every building that goes up, we're trying to make an extra buck on margin. So we're hiring fewer workers, we're doing crappier work, and there really is less to be proud of on some job sites. And the people who are really finding excellence in this industry and who are succeeding, the big successful contractors who are really growing and people love their product, are the ones who are hiring people who are creating stuff that they can be proud of. So getting to actually step back from something and say that you are a part of building something just hits different than showing up to a job, punching the clock, doing your thing, going home and being done with it. Like so many jobs out there, especially a lot of folks who have office jobs, who don't want office jobs. I mean, man, there's alternatives out there. We just don't talk about it because it's not cool or it's not trendy or whatever it might be. There's alternatives out there for people who want to create something with their hands and step back and look at it and go, wow, this is something that I can actually feel proud of at the end of the day. And we just don't talk about that.
Whenever you're talking about something as substantial as suicide awareness and as alarming as to statistics around construction being the second highest rates of suicide in industry, we'd be fooling ourselves if we thought that this was a one-player fix, meaning that it just takes one silver bullet or one easy button to solve this challenge. This is a multi-threaded challenge, if you will, and it's really something that is the responsibility of all of us to lean in, to raise awareness, to provide tools and resources, to up-level conversations we have around, you know, I mean, in construction, we're pretty much, hey, what's my job require me to get it done at any cost? Well, we now see what the outcome of that is. So I think it's important that we partner together to really have a unified voice around why mental health awareness is important, why it matters, and how we can frankly do better as an industry. It takes each of us leaning in to really create that.
Well, yeah, we have to communicate that craftsmanship. We have to communicate that connection. And that is, I think you're right. I mean, I think the builders that are successful, and I think it doesn't matter if they're small or big, it's that they're connected to why you come to work every day. and why they partner with the crafts that they partner with, whether you're general contractor or trade contractor. Like, you want to work for a group that understands that they're delivering a hospital. They're delivering a home for someone to live in. They're, you know, so I think there is some of that, like, that we could peel back the onion if during those early shop days, during those early times, or as we bring people into the industry from a training perspective, immediately connecting them to why they do this. Because that's what happened to me through a weird, you know, playing softball with a few of the craftspeople and them explaining their crafts at the masonry company, and then going out and looking at the work they did completely differently and feeling connected to it. It's why I didn't leave the industry. And I do sit behind a microphone most of the time. You know, I'm not on a job site as much, but I'm still connected because it's why we do it.
Yeah.
Right. It's because until 10 years ago, I didn't think about the street I was driving down. I didn't think about, you know, certain other, you know, where the wastewater treatment plant is and how it was built and how much it can clean and produce. And so, yeah, we have to find a better way to connect them. And I think that also brings us to, you know, we also have to train them a different way. Right. I think there's some things that we have still going on in the business that I think, you know, there's opportunities to improve.
I want to start talking about builder answers, because I can already say my answer to, like, what we need is that Wikipedia, like you just said, a new way of learning. And, like, I was the generation in college where Wikipedia was still sort of this new kind of, like, we're not sure what it is. Like, we think we want to outlaw it, but then it was like, okay, wait, as long as you actually go to the source that it came from and cite that source, then all of a sudden it's okay. It's like, well, wait, that just seems like a really easy, free way to get information faster. And I think that's a lot of attacking the stigma. I was just thinking about, you know, whether I'm, you know, my 3-year-old Charlie, and then, like, you could look at a sanitation worker with a yellow vest on or a construction worker and kind of think that there's, you know, equal rights there. But the more you dig into it, there's so much complexity, so much nuance, so much skill and craftsmanship that go into why there's so many different people on a construction site. It's not just a dirty place where people go. It's those that don't understand it that need to know more. And so it's like, you know, Jeff and I are here to help those that don't live this world, maybe build a little bit more respect for those that do spend time on the site. But it seems like you're really attacking, like, if you are on the site, how the heck do you know what the heck you're supposed to do? Because this stuff is complicated and there's a lot of questions on the job site. I mean, it sounds like that's what led to it, but tell us more.
Yeah. I mean, stigma is a huge piece of what created Builder Answers. And you were just touching on that, Nathan. That perception and the stigmas of the industry, unfortunately, a lot of them are true, right? It's that old school mentality where my life sucked for 15 years and people beat the crap out of me. So guess what? Your life's going to suck for 15 years and I'm going to beat the crap out of you. And that's just, like, you know, we've come and gone from that world. That's not the way the world operates anymore. There's too much opportunity out there. If you treat me like crap, I'm going to go work somewhere else, or I'm going to choose a different industry entirely. And one of those ways that people get treated like crap is when they don't know the answers to every question that comes across their docket in the day. Well, that's completely unrealistic, right? So instead of having to go ask your superintendent or project manager or foreman, hey, you know, I've got this situation in front of me, what should I do? And getting berated by them, you pull out your phone, you use Builder Answers, you ask the question. You know, you should always get more information for sure. We don't claim to be the be all end all that knows every specification and every code in every city across the country, but it gives you a starting point, right? It gives you the answers to most of your simple questions, most of your really complicated questions. We've put this thing through the ringer and it's really hard to stump it if it's something in the construction space. However, it can't be the be all end all because it can't know everything all the time, but it gives you another tool to find the answer to your question that you're too embarrassed to go ask your superintendent because you're going to get berated, or you're the superintendent and you're supposed to know the answer and you don't know the answer. Instead of Googling something and having to surf through 20 different links and 50 different blogs, hoping you may or may not find the right answer in the amount of time you need, you type your question in, boom, you got an answer, and you can continue on with your work. If it's something significant enough that we're talking about having liability, you should probably check your facts. We don't want to be the be all end all for all construction knowledge. That's not what we're built for. We're a simple solution. You get the answer in 2 seconds, you move forward. So eliminating those stigmas and challenges, I guess, is the answer to your question, Nathan.
Yeah, it's a powerful piece of exactly what, Nathan, you were talking about when Wikipedia came out, right? If you were in a certain class or you were doing, you know, in school, you got a basic understanding. You could approach the teacher and with a little bit of background and say, the way I understand it is, well, going to a foreman, a superintendent on the site and saying that changes the way that they approach you. If you just walk up and go, well, it says I got to do this. First of all, like, yeah, you could have Googled it. You're probably not going to find it. Yeah. And if you do, you 9 times out of 10 is going to be the wrong thing or completely off base. So it's kind of like some of the other things we've seen in the AI space is like, it doesn't answer your question. It narrows down your options and it gives you some background that then you can use your brain to go, this sounds good. Or this is maybe where, this is what we need to do. Or, hey, let's have a conversation. And now I feel like a little bit more empowered at that table talking to those superintendents. Cause it is, and we have a show coming up next week with Matt Oley. And we talk about this, like that school of hard knocks that you can't be wrong. The bravado, like that is changing. But it can be changed from multiple angles, right? You can empower people with that information. We've got it now at our fingertips.
It's everywhere, man. It's everywhere. It should be in everybody's pockets. They should be able to pull it out and find an answer to a question without having to go ask somebody else or call them on the radio or walk the block and a half from the job site to the office trailer. It's like you said, it's another tool in the tool belt to allow these guys to come up with solutions without having to go through that rigmarole of getting braided and perpetuating that stigma, because that's not going to change overnight, right? There's still guys who have been working in this industry for 30 years. We can talk about it. And really, that's the problem. We need to siphon that kind of crap out. But that also doesn't mean that, you know, let's say we get builder or we get that old stigma out of the industry. You still have to have a place where you can go ask questions, whether you've been doing it for 40 years or for 4 weeks, you still got to find a place that's going to spit out answers for you and help you progress in your work without having to stop the whole project and go do a long dissertation online or figure something out in a book or call the guy who's been working there for 40 years. We still want answers to those questions quickly.
Well, yeah. And you can sort of democratize those answers across too, because, you know, most of what we talk about is, you know, we're losing so many people in the industry and we're losing their knowledge as they go out.
Yeah.
Right. But if we can codify that and get that into the code, then we have a power, but also we can cross boundaries we couldn't cross before. Right. We see this all the time in the silos of a single, you know, if you have a company that's all across North America, there's probably just as many silos as there is offices. That knowledge stays there. So, you know, tools can start to bring that knowledge together and start to ask questions of, oh, wow, we've learned this in this other area. Let's not make that mistake again. Yeah. You know, hey, this is great. But as an industry, then we can also start to realize like, hey, we think we should do this, but actually the data and the info says you may want to think about this instead, you know, whatever that decision might be. And then you sit down and have that conversation and decide, because we can't do things the way we've always been doing them and expect that this industry is going to get any better. We've got to do a few new things. And I like that you're looking at it as a part of the toolkit and not the entire, you know, if too many people, you know, want to be everything to everybody. And we all know how that one works. You know, we know how that silver bullet turns out.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And Nathan, you mentioned this earlier too, right? Like they do things different in Europe. They do things different in Africa or South America. I mean, those are gross generalizations, but if we can stop and ask why do they do things different over there? Is their way better or is our way better? Let's bring that back to the States.
Whoa! Are you trying to say that American isn't the best way?
It's going to get way worse, Nathan. What if something they do in California is better or worse than something that they do in Texas or Colorado or New York.
Oh, you're definitely from Boulder. You're definitely from Boulder.
So if we can, to your point, Jeff, if we can start to conglomerate that information instead of it like slowly creeping across the country, we can put it all in one bucket and people can utilize those resources to make decisions for their project, whether it's an architect or an engineer utilizing Builder Answers or a guy on a job site who just showed up. If we can conglomerate that information to figure out how we do things best, then all of a sudden what we do on a job site can become a little bit more like what we do in the software space, where once somebody writes a set of code, we're seeing it with AI in general. It's this perpetual compounding growth that we see in software because code begets code begets code, and we see progress in this exponential rate. Well, in construction, it's like something is slowly creeping across the country, whether it comes from a manufacturer or a trade who figures out how to do something. And we've got to help perpetuate that progress. And this is a tool to help do that. So when we learn something in New York, it can affect things in Louisiana and Montana much faster than it currently does.
Well, and part of that democratization is the fact that I can see here this is free. And yep. And that's, I have to imagine there's costs involved in that. And like, how do you make that work? Because yeah, altruism and reality don't always mix well.
Yeah, no, that's really fair. At this point in time, we're depending on growth from pre-existing organizations. So for right now, one thing is funding another in my life and with these companies. Ultimately, we want to progress this thing to a point where we can continue gathering information. And because the growth and information are compounding, we can keep those prices where they're at. Right now, that's free. And we'll see where the funding goes. That's something we want to tackle down the road. We want this thing to be free forever to users because we actually want it to impact the industry and push the industry forward. We want anybody on any job site or any office to be able to pull the product out and use it. So how we handle that now, we've got it covered. How we handle that down the future as this thing, or in the future as this thing grows, talk to me in 6 months, 12 months, 18 months. We're going to figure out a way to keep it free. I just don't know what it's going to look like. That comment may come back to bite me in the butt and I might sound really naive.
Wikipedia is still free, but they get better every year at guilt tripping you at the end of the year to give them some money.
That's exactly right. Someone's writing a check and someone will write the check for this. I just don't know what that's going to look like quite yet.
Well, yeah, I could see a number of different ways for the funding model to grow. I want to peel back the onion a little bit though, because I hear this on the road a lot. Like, why Builder Answers? Why can't I just use ChatGPT or, you know, insert your flavor of open model right now?
You're going to hate this answer. It's bad for a podcast, but it's good for me. Go use them both and see what you think. I guarantee you'll come back to Builder Answers and you won't use the alternative. So I think really the longer answer that you're probably looking for, Jeff, is we've created it to be for people on a construction site. Factor in whatever stereotypes you want. That's what we built it for. It doesn't matter whether you're a C-suite guy or you're new to the job site, everyone can use this tool and get something out of it. We've made the UI and the UX side of things such that it's easy, it's simple, but it's also informative. There's no hoops to jump through. Obviously, we need to verify that we're not getting screwed over by bots all over the place, mm-hmm. increasing those costs that you're talking about, Nathan. So we want to make sure actual humans are using it. But outside of that one step, it's the most fluid. Type your question, get your answer, and you're moving on. And some of the stuff that we're getting feedback on from our competition, so to speak, is not quite so fluid. So put it to the test. If you don't think so, then I'd advise you to go somewhere else. But we haven't got that feedback once. So maybe someday we will.
No, I will say in all honesty, I circulated Builder Answers out a lot because we all know I don't actually build a lot of things. I can ask some interesting questions, but honestly can't really dig that far. And it got a ton of positive feedback that it is trained differently than ChatGPT and some of the other models, because that's what I wanted to get at is, and it's what people don't understand is there is a need for subject matter expertise still built into the models, built into the way that you're consuming information, built into the way that you're preventing hallucinations, preventing some of those kinds of things.
It's really interesting because I'm doing this house, I'd have to fill some wood. So I asked a question about how should I fill a hole in exterior wood? And through builder answers, I get one answer of which I would agree exterior wood filler is the best of the options. ChatGPT gave me like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of 5 different ways I could do it, one of which being wood filler. And so there were some of the same points, but I think, yeah, it's, you can see the structure of it is very much, here's your material and tools, here are your steps. Like it's very much how a builder would think about how to go about this. So that, I can see that. That's awesome. But is the source of information more, I mean, not to get too technical or maybe you can't share, but are you sourcing the same information and just displaying it differently? Or is it actually a different source of information?
No, I can't get too much into the technical details of it, but essentially, nothing to hide. It's just at some point we get to the point where it's like, no one even knows what we're talking about anymore. But in a nutshell, one of the reasons that it exists is to move Nathan forward in a straight and direct path. So yeah, there could be 6 different answers out there that would all work. Now all of a sudden we're reading blogs, right? And we're trying to decipher, well, geez, now there are 6 answers. I don't even know what one of these things or 6 of these things are. And now we're on a whole new path. We wanted to take the information that's available, make it really concise, give you a bit of direction. And depending on what you're asking, maybe we do need to spit out a couple of answers. But in a situation like you just presented, it's pretty cut and dry. Let's give the one answer that should be utilized. If Nathan has a scenario where that's not going to work, you can come back and ask a new question saying, hey, you know, I can't use wood filler in this situation. I do have a hole. What should I do? And we'll give you a different answer. Does that answer your question?
Very much so.
Yeah, and it's exactly the way you'd want to do it in the field, right? Yeah. You're going to walk up, you're going to try, and you're going to go, oh, wait a minute, I can't do this, so I need another alternative. And then you can ask it for the alternative. It's taking you through a step-by-step process, which is, you know, exactly what we need. And, you know, there is a lot of noise in some of the others, and there always will be. And I think I'm a big fan of purpose built, leveraging some of the other things out there, and people can dig in the way they want to dig in. What I'm interested in, since you've gotten us here, Marcus, in some of our pre-call stuff, we talked a lot about, you know, really fortifying that future trades, future builders for us. What are some of the other things that maybe you see coming alongside or just expanding out on that toolkit? Not necessarily that you're going to do, but that you want to see others do, or opportunities. Where do you see this thing going?
Man, Jeff, if I knew the answer to that question, I probably wouldn't be on this call right now. I'd be out writing code to figure out the solutions. I don't know. I think the answer that I would provide is kind of a crappy one. I'm doing everything that I know how to do and I think adds value to this thing. I think it's going to take a huge group of people figuring out a whole bunch of different things that help progress this thing and come up with those tools that go in the tool belt. A lot of them already exist and we got to figure out how to put them together better. And some of them no one's thought of yet. But I guess I don't know the answer to your question, Jeff. You got any thoughts for me? I wish I did.
It's funny because I've been noodling and I've had a lot of time to think recently, and I'm starting to look at what the new solutions look like. And, you know, I was pretty, you know, and I'm still pretty guarded on AI, right? And because I think I understand hype curves in general. And our tendency as a world to overhype things and underproduce, you know, how many times has some invention going to change the way we do everything? And well, it's changed it a little, but it hasn't changed it enough. I think those thousands of tools that we talked about have to be connected. I have this view that there are so many, you said it before, you know, there's a point solution for this, a point solution for that. And they're all built for a real good reason, right? Like somebody had a real problem. Somebody saw that problem, a founder or somebody in an organization with some of those skills, and they designed a solution. But that's why today we have thousands of solutions and we have tech fatigue. right? Because we're jumping from here to there to here to there to this to that. I have this idea, and I'll throw it out there that I think right person, right place, right information. We're each going to fall into our role as what we do. If you're, you know, driving a delivery truck, you're mainly going to be in maps, right? You're mainly going to be in charting out where you're going. But as things change, just like we do with traffic or needs change, they're going to be filtered into not some new app that I got to flip over to, but into that app to consume the data from the other place that then going to present us with what do we need to do. I have a road blocked off, or we have an issue with dropping off the materials in the scheduled site. What do I do? Who do I alert? Right now, I'm going to nine different, I'm probably pulling over and going to nine different places to do that. What if the information from those other apps was telling my ways of, you know, driving around, whatever it might be? Oh, you need to skip this one. Go to this material drop off here. Hey, send a text message that that's what you're doing to both places. And by the time you get there, any report back from anybody else will say, oh, we have an alternate entry for you, and you come in the other way. Mm. Basically, you're going to live more and more in your native app, and you're going to consume information from other places. It's just this theory that I think with what I'm watching, connectivity, AI, and some of the other, and not really AI, to be honest. This is some things that we just haven't, some glue we haven't applied in enough places.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think with our industry, it adds another level or layer of complexity too, because we've got so much hardware, like physical, tangible goods. That's what construction is, right? Is putting physical, tangible goods in the right place to create something new, bigger, better. And as long as that's the case, we're going to need development on both sides of things, right? I don't think that technology is going to be the savior of construction that takes it from operating in 1900 to 2024. We have to have developments in tools from Milwaukee and DeWalt and Max and some of those other guys. And we have to have production in lumber connectivity at some point, right? Is there a better way to do what we're doing? We've seen some of that from Simpson with their hangers. It used to all be nails and screws, and we're creating some development there. So we've got all these different areas that we have to continue to see progression. I generally agree with you, Jeff. I think, like, you know, AI hit the market and it was going to change the whole world, and people downloaded ChatGPT and it was like really fun for a few days. And then it's like, well, what am I actually going to use this thing for? I guess I'm not, unless you use it to write your code for you, unless you use it to create your art for you. If you're an architect and you need to create renderings, it can do that for you faster than you ever could. So we found all these specific use cases, but to think that one thing is just going to like wash over the entire industry or the entire world, no way, man. We've got to be skeptical and fill these really specific niches with things that AI is really good at, and the rest will continue to compound on itself. I think that's really where it comes from, both the software side and the physical goods or hardware side of things.
Yeah. I guess my question is, how much will we have to learn it versus it just finally figures out how to adapt to us? Because that to me, I think is the barrier. And that probably is the whole AI, I forget what it's called when they're as smart as humans now, but that level
general intelligence is everything.
Exactly. But because we always have to learn. And I was just thinking like Control V, like or like little shortcuts on your keyboard. And like when somebody will see you do that, I go, oh my god, that would save me so much time. You're like, really? Like something that's been around for 25 years?
Yeah.
But you don't know what you don't know, right?
Exactly.
And so much of this stuff is like teaching efficiencies that we're not aware of, and do we have to teach them, or at what point do we just ask and it delivers us answers? But again, we still have to take the time to ask and not just continue doing it the way we've always done it.
That's exactly right. You can't bury your head in the sand and pretend it's not happening, because it's happening. But if you think it's going to change the entire world before the end of 2024, you're probably wrong too. You know, the truth is always somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, there's it's always in that gray area. I love that you went to the tools, Marcus, because that is something I think consistently, if we're going to really diversify the workforce that we have, however you actually want to define that, by, you know, gender, by size, by ability, you know, some of the equipment that we have, no matter who you are, you have to be big and strong to operate it, right? There's a limitation, but we're seeing things like Hilti, you know, I talk on the road all the time, and the hit at FCA last week was the Hilti exoskeleton. And then I showed them, I'm like, wait, have you seen the new, I'm going to call it a crane. I'm getting it wrong, but basically it's a lift. It comes up over you, has a hook, picks it up, and now I'm operating it, but I can let my hands go, and I can see it eventually being connected to me and to the hand. So if I let go, it turns off, you know, all these protection mechanisms, all these things that can, you know, simplify the way we use a tool, and then also connect that tool to me. And you can know how long I'm working and when I push to a point where I'm going to have safety incidents, when I'm not going to work at optimal performance. We saw this from like Electri and Nika did some studies on like where at the point of overtime does productivity go down and safety incidents go up. We need to stop right there.
Yep.
Well, more data and more tools telling us that those kinds of things and being more user-friendly. You know, the original exoskeleton that I don't think it was an exoskeleton, but it was like it was for an impact drill and you hooked it onto the top. United Rentals used to rent these, and you could put it on like a lift and it could reach around a corner and run the drill, and the arm was taking everything. So you could do angles you could never do if you were holding that tool yourself. Like, and think about it, a person, all different people now can use these tools and can become a part of the craftsmanship. So talk about opening up the world. I think tools are some of the most fundamental places. By the way, you mentioned this earlier, Marcus, about so much of what we build is for the office. You know, we actually, unfortunately, in my opinion, like we became an accounting industry that dabbled in building things and sending information to the field to get filled out. And that has to go away. Has to go away.
Yeah.
That is not, money is the fuel that goes in our engine, because we don't run as businesses if we don't have it. But it is not why we're in business. We're in business to build incredible, beautiful things. And really impactful, important things. And so what if the tool could send information back to accounting to answer a bunch of those questions? Because it doesn't mean, and I don't mean that accounting's not important. I'm just saying that it's not building things. So maybe there's ways for us to do those kinds of connected systems. I like that you took the idea of heading there.
Ultimately, that's what we have to do, right? Whether it's accounting or things carrying objects for us, we're minimizing that friction every day, whether it's hardware or software. That's exactly what we need to be aiming for. You hit the nail on the head. That's one of those 1,000, quote unquote, 1,000 tools that we need is something, you know, there is this barrier to entry, right? You have to physically be able to pick something up. Well, that eliminates a really large majority of the population, right? Even a guy who could pick it up for 10 years, 20 years, all of a sudden his body can't do that anymore. Now he's shifted roles. If we can make everybody capable of doing that, that's really easy to see that that's one of those 1,000 tools, and it falls on the hardware side with a bunch of software behind it, you know, as one of those things that's going to move us forward. Were you going to say something, Nathan? I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Oh, no, I'm surprised Jeff hasn't brought up his favorite quote yet.
Let's hear it, Jeff. What do you got?
Do you remember what it is? Come on, Jeff.
Well, I'll show you. Show me how I measured and I'll show you how I act.
Yeah, that's your quote. That's tell me how quote. I measure, I'll tell you how I behave. But
yes.
But, you know, I think that whole point of, how are you measured? Is it based on your physical strength? Is it based on your mental aptitude? Is it based on, you know, all these different things? And so, yeah, and money's still going to be a huge component in that measurement. Yeah. But how do we reassess what are the measurements of success and you know, fulfillment in this industry? Yeah, we have to redefine those.
Yeah, and I think we have to redefine, I mean, a lot of the ways we're going to see new materials, circular economy, those kinds of things hit us is if we start to incorporate new materials, new processes, and then new ways to do things. I mean, some of the early stumbles in, you know, fabrication were just not remembering how to order a truck and load a truck. And if you've ever watched, you know, like I'm interested. I have not asked Builder Answers this yet, but like, oh, wait, I have all these, you know, panels and I have to deploy them to the site. How should I organize them? I've watched people like go through a headache exercise to figure it out. It's like, well, if we label them and then we put them in reverse order so that when they get to the site, they're deployed. But then you got to remember, oh, wait, do we put them down first when we get to the site? So does that reverse the revert? There's where technology behind some of those things can be impactful. Well, so that's some of the things. So we know you want to grow Builder Answers. We know, you know, you want it to be a part of that. What other plans in store, if you can share any that you have for the product, and then let everybody know too, where they can go get it and try it out. And, you know, I love that you let me just send it to a bunch of people and start hitting it up.
Well, that's ultimately what it's all about. You know, Outpost Construction Supply is more on the commercial and civil side of things, industrial. So we basically do everything but single family homes. As I was developing Builder Answers, I quickly realized that it was not plausible to create a product that fit just a specific niche of construction. So commercial or industrial or residential. No, it's really hard to create something that is specified for one of those groups. But more importantly, if we're capable of taking it to the next level that we did, we can service everybody. So it doesn't matter whether you're a DIY guy trying to fix something in your house, or you're on one of the most complex bridge builds out there. You will be able to find the answers that you're looking for. So the next phase, Jeff, is getting this in as many people's hands as we possibly can. Do I think the product is perfect today? No, I don't think it will ever be perfect. Everything is always undergoing a new iteration. If it's not, it will soon be obsolete. So we want that feedback. We want that growth. And really, at this point, it's getting it as many hands as we can. Like I said, from one end of the states to the other. Right now, we're focused solely on the United States. So if you ask a question about code or what needs to be done or specifications in Brazil, we're going to tell you, sorry, we're not equipped to handle that right now. So now that's a logical step down the road, is going global with this thing. But I need more feedback. We need more feedback on what's working well in the states and what we need to tweak, and how we can be a resource for everybody from the DIY guy to people who are building the largest structures in the country. And there's some really fun ones going on right now. It's fun to be a part of. So getting it in people's hands and getting feedback, figuring out how we can grow this thing and how we're benefiting people too. It's as simple as going to the name of the company online, builderanswers.com. It makes everything pretty dang self-explanatory. You don't have to have a very high understanding of anything tech or education wise, trades, no trades. Go to builderanswers.com, ask your question, and it'll take care of the rest. It's as simple as typing it into the box. The more people we get using this thing, the faster we can make it better and better and better.
Awesome. And if anybody's interested in talking to you, where can they catch you?
My email is always open, man. Marcus@builderanswers.com. Marcus is spelled MARCUS. So Marcus@builderanswers.com. I would love any feedback you got, positive or negative.
Awesome. I think that's the beauty of the industry too. So many of the thinkers out there are already crunching away at this and thinking about what else you might possibly be able to do and hopefully keep it free all at the same time.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. We'll perpetuate that problem with users and then we'll figure out how to solve it. Be great.
Hey, that's the name of the game, right? You know, solve a problem, find a new problem, solve a problem, find a new problem.
Exactly.
Your continuous improvement. So
that's right.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, it has been awesome to have you here. I'm sure there's people who are going to be reaching out. There's people who are going to be checking out Builder Answers. But now we got to jump into the construction technology news of the week. And don't worry, Marcus is coming with us. So Nathan Wood, why don't you take it away?
Yeah, you know me, I'm always trying to bring outside news into what's how it's going to impact construction. So this one, you may have seen the FTC's non-compete ban could reshape the U.S. workplace. So this is, again, a big, big change to the business world. Anyone that's ever heard of the non-compete clause, I know we're in Colorado or California, our right-to-work states, but this is sort of taking this to that next level at the federal level to basically say that all states across the entire U.S. Cannot enforce this non-compete ban. Essentially, the rule means it will become easier for millions of U.S. workers to leave their existing jobs to work for a competing company or start their own. So good for us workers. But on the company side, it's going to be harder for them to protect those trade secrets and their confidential information. So I think it sounds like this will still be, you know, a longer battle. We'll see, you know, what actually makes its way through all these lawsuits, of course, coming out of Texas and other parts of the South. But I do think this is interesting. And Jeff, I know you have opinions on this around just, you know, what this means for especially those of us in contact, because I know a few folks that have taken these non-compete sort of stints, and shoot, it might actually be a nice little mental health break for those of us that are facing some burnout. So you may not have those breaks anymore. But what are your thoughts on this one, Jeff?
Well, I'm really digging it because I think it exposes another problem. Is I think we hide too much behind non-competes and we use it to cover the flaws in our culture and the flaws in what we really need to focus on to keep great people. The some of the things I learned early on in my career was that, you know, money's not everything, especially this new generation. You know, having an impact, being respected, being listened to, being a part of a why. Something. Why am I building something? Why am I a part of this company? Why do I want to go to work for these people every day is important. And you should have the right to find the places that you want to do that. A lot of those cases that you're talking about, you know, people are leaving in droves. If you're good people who are leaving in droves, the problem's probably you. And it's probably your culture. And you can't hide behind legal, you know, jargon here. But it is quite interesting to see how this will impact a few other, you know, there is IP rules that'll still be in place. So I think that could get a little hairy, you know, because you built something one place. You know, technically, you're not taking the code there with you, but
well, an IP agreement and a non-compete clause are two different things, right? Yeah,
which could give lawyers a whole nother area to throw things across the bow at. But ultimately, too, I like I said, I think it's I'm all for you know, I used to talk about this in my IT days, way back when I had clients in IT. I would hand them over the Visio diagrams and the password lock and, you know, the vault and say, listen, here's all the keys to the kingdom. You can leave me at any time. My job is to make sure you just don't want to. And they always appreciated that too, because it creates a level of trust. And, you know, you've been around, and the construction business is a very competitive industry. There's a lot of people moving around from company to company. There's a lot of tapping on the shoulders to go to other places. There's a lot of that in contact. It's never going to go away. It should be about wanting to stay, not having to stay. My little take on it.
Well, and the one thing I thought was interesting, the rules, because they do say here some banks, certain nonprofits such as healthcare providers and stockyards are industries that don't have to comply. So like they're kind of picking and choosing certain industries, and I don't know, Marcus, from a business school standpoint, if there, you have any insight into why other those industries stand out, or like, yeah, like if construction should fall into that, you know, those that either should or should not be protected from something like this.
I mean, what, you know, you spend any time in our industry, every company out there started because a guy left another company and went out and started his own thing. So I don't know that this impacts the day-to-day workforce or contractors out there so much as it does the tech side of our industry. I think I'm in line with Jeff on this one. If you find something while working at a company that you can capitalize on by doing it better, isn't that the American economy in a nutshell? When Silicon Valley lays off swaths of people, that's when our greatest tech revolutions happen. The newest, biggest, best products come from folks who are forced to leave or sometimes leave on their own volition. And they go out and create something bigger or better or different. As long as we believe in what we say we believe in as a country at our core, stifling that growth is really all most non-competes do. I think there's a handful out there that are worth something and are really valuable, especially when we're factoring in the IP conversation. That changes the dynamics. At that point, we're talking about theft. But as long as someone's leaving to go do something better, go do it, man. That's what this place is all about. I think it's awesome.
Yeah. But last, before you jump to the next one, Nathan, is I would also say that is the one thing too. I would hope this ban in certain areas allows those people, Marcus, like you're saying, that have been drawn into somewhere and they're constantly saying there has to be a better way, but no one will listen. Hmm. And they just get that entrepreneurial spirit, roll up their sleeves, leave and start it. Now more than ever is the time for entrepreneurs in the construction and trades industry to start their own digitally native, well put together companies to compete with the others. You have the knowledge, you have the knowledge of culture, you have the drive, and the technology is at your fingertips. And it's, you know, it's pay as you go. It's as a service. It's the time. So I would love to see that. And I've been, you know, wanting that revolution and sort of predicting it for a little while. So it's good to say. Nathan, what else you got for us, buddy?
All right. Well, thank you, Jeff, for sharing this video with me. We know and love Fred Mills with the B1M. If you haven't seen the B1M videos, they're fantastic. But this one, again, I'm a big history buff, or like construction history. I love seeing sort of how cities and skylines evolve. Learned a ton here from Fred. So it is embarrassing that as an American, I'm learning a lot from our friend across the pond here about the history of Times Square and why this iconic New York building is empty. So it goes through the whole history of Times Square and similar to the Flatiron Building, kind of why the Times Square building itself is in this sort of triangular shape, but how it's evolved through office buildings. And again, I think Jeff and I both learned that New York, it's named after the New York Times, which I certainly did not know before this. But all kinds of fun facts, cool history, 11 minutes, really engaging video. I highly encourage you to watch this and other B1M videos and just keep yourself educated on all the cool stuff that drives us to be in construction. Marcus, I don't know if you've seen any of these B1M videos before or what you thought of this one.
I can't count the number of times I've been in Manhattan or Times Square and seen that building and really never given the slightest consideration that what is behind that lit up globally known advertising space was an empty box. I mean, that's mind blowing to me. So that was fascinating in and of itself. And to hear what they're planning to do with it is pretty exciting too. Well worth the time to watch it.
Yeah. I'm going to jump in. Cause I was sharing it around a while ago. Cause I was in New York City and I didn't know it was empty, but what's awesome is in the process of doing this from a construction and architectural perspective at night, they've been changing it out. And so now, so you guys know, you know, One Times Square is this little triangular building and it's the one with all the billboards that you see all the time for any major, you know, production. We had Fred Mills was on it for a Get Construction Talking, but the the videos themselves, the billboards, so to speak, the digital billboards themselves are worth more rent than the building because of how it's built. But what they're doing is they've over time removed those and moved them out onto a permanent, the billboards permanently out, detached from the building, and they're going to upgrade the entire building to match the current architecture. To Nathan's point, the building has changed over time, and they're not going to look to try and put, you know, full-time people in there anymore. They're going to put interactive spaces so you can rent them out and throw your big party. They're going to put a big, huge cantilevered kind of viewing deck so you can see out over the area there and also look up and see the famous ball dropping from up there. And maybe put that space to use.
Well, I love that the business that those video billboards drives is so much that they would move them out, keep them in place, and do all the construction behind it. To me, like, that just tells you what money drives in New York and Times Square. I mean, that's just crazy.
Yeah, it's like one of the most photographed parts of the planet. Like, It gets so many people. If you've ever been there, everybody's trying to get their selfie with that, with whatever's up there. If you're advertising, that's where you want to be. So kind of goes to show you. And yeah, I love that. And thanks, Fred, for all the cool videos and the rabbit holes. And sometimes I want to say you're killing my construction productivity, but you're educating me at the same time.
It's a healthy distraction.
Yes. It's like an it's an educational distraction.
That's so, right. That's right.
Yeah.
All right, Jeff, what do you got?
And it helps my YouTube algorithm. Yeah. I'm really happy for this one because this is one of our hosts here and over at the Construction Dorks, one of my fellow hosts at the Construction Dorks in PHC News. So this is a construction technology article by Travis Voss about his new role at SMACNA. So at SMACNA, Travis has taken over the role as Director of Innovative Technologies and Fabrication, and really joining in this article covers what he really wants to focus, where craftsmanship meets technology. So if you know Travis, he came from Helm Group and Mechanical Inc. as it is now, and really helped them, but wanted to move up and help in the sheet metal industry. You know, interesting to note, as I got to learn the sheet metal industry, they're far ahead of a lot of other parts of our industry on fabrication and offsite, et cetera. It has a lot to do with the size and the volume of what they take up and the way that they were possible of doing it. But interestingly, the technology tools for them didn't keep up with some of the forward thinking that they were doing from a fabrication and offsite perspective. So this is an opportunity for, you know, SMACNA to put someone in charge of really looking at those technologies, really marrying those technologies together with the people in the industry and look for opportunities to build better, build more efficiently and continue to be at the forefront of, you know, where construction meets technology, which I think, you know, it's funny, they call them tin knockers, but, you know, it's where they've been the whole time. It's just they haven't really necessarily, you know, established their seat at the table. So I think this is kind of interesting too. The other angle for me here is seeing that, you know, Nika and Electri have adopted this and put people in charge of, in fact, multiple people, that MCAA has done the same. And now SMACNA has done the same. It's really showing that from a industry advancement perspective, that these organizations, these trade organizations, you got to put someone in charge of it, right? It's just like we had to do at our contracting companies. If technology was a focus, someone has to be in charge. Someone has to lead the charge. And this is SMACNA doing that. So congrats to Travis. Also some great information about the way that, you know, we can use artificial intelligence and large language models and generative design to really unlock some needed productivity, some needed advancements for sheet metal in particular. But I think a lot can be gleaned from it.
I mean, I'm going to put my BIM hat on for a second here because I think I like everything that Travis is saying through here about the power of AI and what it can do, but especially for MEP contractors, you know, I have always felt like having BIM is so core and having the information within it accessible to doing all these things with AI. But yet, you know, again, we'll see where the survey numbers come back at. But I think, you know, overall adoption of BIM across MEP contractors is still, I mean, maybe it's probably above 50%, but it's, you know, nowhere near 100%. And I keep wondering, like, is BIM a requirement to do AI, or like, what level of data standards, you know, do you need to really be successful with this? Because there's so much hype around it. But, you know, without some sort of base standards, I mean, Marcus, again, you probably can't talk about it, but I know you live in this world. You have any opinions on how we, how trades can better standardize their processes to take advantage of AI.
No, I think the standardization is part of the problem. I know that sounds crazy, but as long as we have this vast differentiation in skill sets and education levels in our industry, which is never going to go away, it's really difficult to standardize a high level technology on any project and assume, especially with a user based price structure on whatever the software is, assume that everybody's going to use it. It's never going to take hold. So I think that's a challenge in and of itself, Nathan.
Yeah, well, it's awesome to see Travis doing it. So congrats, Travis. Maybe we'll have you on to talk about it soon. Yeah,
congrats, Travis. That's awesome.
And the last one is a little shout out to some friends of ours that I think go unnoticed. So this is for Clark Ellis and Kelsey Henderson at Continuum Advisory Group. They put out a construction spending index. And if you're like me, you're always trying to dig through numbers, dig through the finances, understand, you know, compare what you're talking to people about out in the industry with, you know, what the numbers are saying. And so their May 2024 construction spending updates, overall construction put in place was down 0.2% from January to March and up 9.6% over the last year. So we've had a little slowdown, but not much, but we're still ahead of last year. After several years growth, non-residential construction declined by 0.2% over the last quarter, but it's still up 13% on an annual basis. And then residential construction was flat in Q1 after steadily growing in the second half of 2023. So, and if you look back, you can go month by month on the spending and really get growth ideas and really understand, because part of what has to drive business is understanding where money's going, being ahead of it, and not just listening to the hype. I mean, everywhere I go, I hear record backlog, record work, I just don't think you talk if you're not in that situation though, right? So interesting. Yeah, you're laughing, Nathan.
Self-serving.
What do you got?
Well, no, I mean, numbers are self-serving, and I am not the person to be talking about this stuff, because on that whole Myers-Briggs thing, I'm like the furthest away from people that care about stats. I'm like, hey, tell me a convincing story, and I'll be the most gullible person in there. But no, they are telling, and if they're telling you something that you want to hear, then maybe you should be a little bit skeptical of it. But I think, you know, I'm always a fan of and in awe of and envious of those that do take the time to put together these numbers and these charts, because they are, you know, very helpful to this industry. One of my things that I wish we would do, as this is more of like an economic trend thing of measurement and tell me how I'm measured, the categories of construction are pretty broad. There's basically like residential, non-residential, like infrastructure, right? Like there isn't a lot of breakdown in like data centers versus healthcare versus other things. And I wish there was more of that. And I don't know like who could possibly step up and try and get that level of breakdown, but that would be nice. I'll have to check in here and see if they did any of that.
They have a little breakdown on manufacturing.
You're right. On page 3. I'm seeing it right now. Yeah. Okay. So there is some, yes. But I think like data centers was one, because they're so unique that it was like, where do you put data centers? And I don't see anything here. For like, because some put it in just commercial office, but it's not commercial office because you estimate it based on kilowatt hour, not per square foot of, you know, human space. But it's not a manufacturing facility. So yeah, like what do you call it?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And those numbers are crazy depending on where you are. And then, you know, I always like that they use the leading indicators for the AIA to back it up. And they do a little bit of the warehouse, looks like it's peaked. So they break the numbers down in the areas where they are. But you're right. It's a census thing.
We would have to appeal to the U.S. Census to say, hey, can you break down more stuff? Which again, it's a tall order. I'm not saying this is continuum responsibility, but it would be a nice thing to have.
But a good tool to put in your toolbox. Yes. And excited for them to do. Marcus, any thoughts on it or just data in general driving businesses?
I'm opposite of Nathan. I love anything to do with stats and data. So we make a good team together, Nathan. It's right. Beautiful. No, I nothing much to add other than fascinating statistics. I'm always looking for places to pull this kind of information. They do a really, really good job. So I guess if I have anything to add, it's a commercial for them doing what they do really, really well.
Yeah, I dig this too, because Marcus, I need people like you in the room as well. Nathan and I are very similar in that way. You tell me a compelling story, I'm running out the door. I need data to calm me down and to, you know, center me on, like, I know you feel that way, but let's look at, and just we all need that, right? Yeah, we need to know that we need it. And, you could probably, you know, we could probably overhype you with a good story.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. We got to have both, man. It's beautiful. It's like a healthy marriage. You got to have a little bit of both. That's what makes
sense. Right. That's the, I say this all the time. I mean, that's the diversity I'm looking for in the room, is diversity of thought. Someone who's driven by numbers, someone who's driven by story. And, you know, everybody has a little bit of that difference. That's why we come together and we're better than the sum of our parts. So this has been an awesome episode. Thank you for my Colorado contingents for sitting down today. Marcus, thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. It was a pleasure. Appreciate you.
Yeah,
it's
fun.
Nathan C. Wood, great to have you. I feel like I'll see you again soon.
Until the next one.
Until the next one. Thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Marcus Kirkwood. To read all our news stories, learn about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontentcrew.com. This is the Content Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.